I can do this. Welcome to the Context Machine, episode number 630. I'm Brian Chaffin. See, I did it.
You did it. I am so proud of you. Yay, you. I'm Jeff Gamet, and I'm Brian Chaffin's personal support human.
Dude, you so are.
I'm so proud of you, Brian. You were able to push the button and make the sound and say the words, and it was all in the right order.
I did it.
You did it. I'm so proud of you, Brian. I'm so proud of you that I feel compelled to tell people that they should go check us out at our apparently still new home, contextmachine.io.
Right. You can use contextmachine.io to reach out to us, or you can find us on post.news and Mastodon at contextmachine. And for what it's worth, you can find us on all the socials. I'm at GeekTales, and Jeff Gamet is at...
I'm at Jay Gamet.
I always forget that.
Well, I can appreciate that because it's not like I'm consistent across all the social medias. Yeah. And it's not like I'm using a handle that has any level of logic to it.
No.
So I totally get it. It's all on me.
The real reason is that it's not me. Duh.
Okay. Okay. I stand corrected.
I wonder what people make of us, man.
I've got a pretty good idea.
Right. So an interesting thing happened on the way to the forum. I guess. I think that's an old Mel Brooks line. Is that Mel Brooks?
It's also from a movie and actually a from his... stage play musical, also from a musical, old Broadway musical.
I thought it was actually a stage thing. Happened on the way
to the forum, and I'm pretty sure it's a musical.
A funny thing happened, not an interesting thing. It's a funny thing.
Well, considering you're being mostly pedantic,
right?
That's a good correction.
Well, it's a Sondheim piece.
Oh, of course. That's why it's so familiar.
And it's the name of it. The name of the musical is "A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum." It's not just a line.
There we go.
It's a forum.
Yeah,
All right. So anyway, Apple did a media event, and this time around, we both watched it.
Right. So that in and of itself is worth noting.
And I didn't watch the first 10 minutes because I was walking my dog, and I haven't gone back to catch up on that. Did anything happen in the first 10 minutes?
The first 10 minutes, that's where we got the quick recap of what's already been announced. So the opening video totally pulls at your heart. Well, literally, because it was all about people whose lives have been saved because of Apple Watch health alerts.
Oh, very nice. I will definitely go and watch that. And then, of course, we had...
Yeah.
You were going to say?
You need to watch that video. It's... I'm sure some people watched it and were like, this is stupid. I don't need it. I'm sorry to have to be the person to make this clear to everyone. If you watched the intro video about Apple Watch saving lives and you came away from it like, wow, that was a waste of time, you just failed the Voight Conf test. I'm sorry.
That seems fair. And then the end of the 10 minutes was the actual introduction of the Apple Watch 9.
Yes. There was also a mention of Vision Pro being on track for release early 2024.
Because I had noted there were essentially only two mentions of Vision Pro in the keynote, but I didn't catch the one at the beginning.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised there weren't a lot of Vision Pro references because that's not the message Apple needed to deliver today or yesterday.
Well, I would say that it is a good thing that they reiterated the fact that it's on track.
Absolutely.
Especially
but they didn't need to dive deeper yesterday.
Right. Agreed. Totally agreed. So here's another interesting thing. Mm-hmm. I took notes on what we're going to talk about today.
Who are you?
I am a liar.
What have you done with Brian?
Because I did not take notes.
Oh, do you want me to copy and paste the notes that I took?
Do you actually have notes?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. I've got mental notes.
Okay, Brian, so you were 10 minutes late because you're out walking the dog. Uh-huh. 10 minutes before the keynote, I'm set up on the couch with two iPads, an iPhone, snacks, and drinks so that I'm not late and don't have to leave the couch.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah. I mean, someone had to do it, and apparently it was me.
Yeah. Fair. Fair. All right. So, let's dive in to, I guess we'll go with Apple Watch.
Yeah. All right. I thought it was a really nice upgrade. I think the S9 SIP is...
Zip?
Yeah, they're calling it a SIP.
Spell that?
Capital S, lowercase I, capital P.
Okay.
System and a processor.
Oh. Ah, so instead of a... instead of a system on a chip, an SOC, they're calling it a SIP.
Mm-hmm.
System in a process. Okay, go ahead.
Anyhow, so basically Apple is putting a processor in the watch that is like for needs today, way more than a watch actually needs. Which I found to be very interesting. The screen brightness is 2,000 nits. So that is twice the brightness compared to Series 8.
Do you know, hold on. Do you know whether or not nits are, do they scale? I mean, like, so, because I don't think that 2,000 nits is actually twice as bright.
They said 2,000 nits, and then they said specifically twice as bright.
I know they said that, but I kind of have a feeling that you need something like 3,000 nits to be twice as bright. I don't have any evidence for this. I don't know enough about how the system works, but I just have a feeling that it's not a linear progression.
Let's see. I'm looking at a website right now because... I can't look at it because it thinks that I have everything blocked. Here we go. Here's a website that will actually let me look at the contact.
A nit
is a unit of measurement that refers to the amount of light that is emitted from a surface or object. Let's see.
All right, so I found...
What is a nit of brightness?
I found an entry here that says, when a TV is said to have 200 nits and the other 800, so this is from several years ago, does the human eye and brain really perceive the 4x jump in brightness? Just asking because blah, 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 blah. Most human senses, logarithmic. Yeah, I don't really think it's... that it's a perceived twice. I'm sure it's brighter, and it's frankly it's awesome that they've done this. I just, like, from a pedantic nitpicky standpoint, I don't think it's twice as bright.
Well, what is the brightness on a Series 8 in nits?
I don't know. See, here's someone saying the 1,000 nits would look about twice as bright as 250 nits. Of course, you know, it's a forum, so who knows?
Right. All right. So according to Mac Tracker, Apple Watch Series 8 1,000 CDM squared. What CDM squared?
Wah, 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 wah. It's like, okay, teacher.
Oh, look, there's a whole thing about, oh, of course. A CDM, so it's CD slash M2.
Okay.
One candelas per square meter.
Okay.
And one nit is equal to one CDM2. There we go. So CDM2 is the fancy way of saying nit. All right. Man, this mostly pedantic thing.
Yeah,
we could fill a whole show with just that.
Yeah, we could. I'm going to delete all of that before I post it.
Yeah, perfect. All right. Okay. The other thing that
wait, hold really on. Are we concurring that I'm right that it's not really it's not perceived as twice as bright?
No, we're just moving on.
Well, so finding more, here's the Mac Rumor forums, right? Mac Rumors forums, twice the luminance is perceived as only about 30% brighter. Yeah. Yeah, it's not.
So we're talking about the difference between technical versus observed.
Yeah.
So from a technical standpoint, they're correct. From a perception standpoint, it's not twice as bright.
That is my very strong feeling.
Okay. Well, regardless, it's brighter.
Yes, it is.
That's the real takeaway.
That is the important thing. And quite frankly, like I've got a 7. I've got an Apple Watch 7 on right now. I skipped last year, and. I feel like it's bright enough to read outside. So I'm sure this is going to be even better. Yeah.
I have an 8 and it's great.
I really just wanted to have a like better understanding. That was the point of my pedantic rabbit hole.
Well, and through our rabbit holing, hopefully we have educated at least one other person. Mm.
Oh, I hope not, man. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? Who wants to be educated by us?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, people. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. All right. Go ahead. So what else are you going to go on about?
Oh, I got to go, Brian. I hear my mom calling. Okay. So we have to talk about the new gesture stuff because that's what everyone is like really... focusing on a lot of the discussion I've seen focuses on that. So they have this new double tap gesture.
Yeah.
And so it's like tap your index finger and your thumb together twice. Doo doo. And
it's like pushing the crown.
No, it's the primary button, whatever the primary button in an app is, which is not the same as pushing the crown.
It usually
so
is.
Like it. No, like if no, that takes you out of the app.
Mm, good point.
That's like the home button.
Oh, I see. So it's like pushing the primary button on an app.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All that's right. That's a really great way to describe it. Thank you. Thank you for doing that, Brian.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, your phone rings and you go tap tap and you can answer on your watch. Or hang up on your watch or whatever the primary button in the app does. That's right. What the double tap thing does for you. And you can get into the smart stack app viewer thing on your watch. And so there's a lot you can do just with tapping your thumb and index finger together. Okay. This is an extension of the accessibility features or growth of the accessibility features that we've already had on the Apple Watch, where you like pinch your fingers, you clench your fist, and you're navigating your watch or you can change what those gestures do. So you could like launch shortcuts or whatever. But this is an extension of that. And I think it's a really smart extension because we should be able to do these sorts of things. Also, I have a hypothesis, which is the gesture support that we've been seeing on Apple Watch through accessibility and now as part of Double Tap. This is Apple using us as unwitting beta testers for gesture control that has become part of Vision Pro.
That does make sense. But yeah, but I don't see anything nefarious in that.
I mean, nothing nefarious, just an observation.
This is a fully baked feature that is being rolled out on the platform.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yep.
This is something that many people may not even be thinking they're going to use, but if they start using it, they're going to be using it all the time without thinking about it, and it'll eventually be I can't imagine having used my Apple Watch without this before.
If what I've been seeing on my social media feeds, and I fully acknowledge that I have a very specific group of people that I follow, this is something that people are going to jump on immediately and are super excited for.
I'm excited about it. I definitely have things where I want to do something and I've got to sort of like finagle my extra hand.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's super nifty.
Yes. Now, you do need a Series 9 Apple Watch to take advantage of this Double Tap feature.
Yes, it is doing this in part based on not only the accelerometer for the way the Apple Watch is moving when you pinch, but it's also measuring blood flow, and blood flow apparently is changed in some way from that tapping motion, which is just freaking amazing.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing, and it's super cool. So there are improved sensors in the watch, which is probably playing into what they're doing with gestures. Anyhow, there you go. And new colors. That's the other thing.
Well, there's one other huge, massive thing. Are you like dumb with the new things in Apple Watch 9?
No. But wait. Oh my gosh, Brian, I thought that was everything. What did I miss?
You missed the fact that this processor that you mentioned that's in this watch now has 4 neural engine cores, which isn't a lot compared to the iPhone, mind you, or the Mac or the iPad, but is a first for Apple Watch. And it is going to be able to handle a lot more of your vocal interactions with Siri directly on the watch, not sending them to Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you want to talk about this too, so I'll introduce it so that everyone thinks that it's my idea.
I love this plan.
Okay, great. This plus the corresponding additions to what the iPhone 15 and 15 Pro can handle on the device without sending it to Apple is freaking huge. It is a very big deal in terms of privacy and in terms of speed and in terms of not sending all your junk to Apple, or, you know, more importantly, the way you would have to with all the other virtual assistants.
Yes, and it also means that in a limited capacity, you can use voice control with your iPhone and your Apple Watch, even when you do not have any sort of data connection.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Brian, I came up with a hypothesis about what's going on with with where Apple's taking the hardware, and the whole thing with more Siri voice control on device, and this ties into Apple's AI strategy. So a lot of what we're seeing right now with Apple and AI, and it was like all through the whole presentation, and we never heard Apple mention AI once, as far as I know. No. But like the technology behind recognizing
the
tap gestures.
They didn't use the term.
Right. AI. Yes. Yes. But yes. So like this gesture support, this has AI written all over it.
Yeah, of course. It has machine learning written all over it. And most,
oh, yeah.
Most people, when they're talking about AI, they really mean machine learning. And by most people, I mean most companies too.
Yes. Yeah. And so if we look at the horsepower we have in a Series 9 and then Apple Watch, and then we look at the horsepower we have in recent iPhones and this year's iPhone announcements, we're looking at hardware that in many ways seems overpowered for what it's designed for. And here's my hypothesis, Brian. Apple has been falling woefully behind on artificial intelligence features compared to what we're seeing from companies like, or from products like Alexa and Google and all of these other AI tools that people are using today. And Siri just feels like it has fallen so far behind. And I think what's happening is all of this AI stuff that Apple has been working on, where they're using it in a more useful versus more gimmicky way to enhance our overall experience, is building up to when we get a big Siri upgrade. And it may be this year, maybe next year. It's coming at some point. But to take advantage of this Super Siri, we need to have hardware that's capable of dealing with the AI, the local AI needs that go along with that. And so we're going to get a voice assistant in Siri that leapfrogs what we have or will have from the competitors. And because Apple has control over the whole thing, including the hardware, they'll be able to make this something that's incredibly good on something on our wrist and in our pocket. So I think there's a long-term Siri strategy, AI strategy happening here, and all the pieces that we need to have before they make the announcement, they're all slowly being rolled out, and they're just not telling us, oh, and by the way, the reason you're seeing all these things in the devices in this way today is because of what we're doing down the road.
I love all of that, except for the part where you said that Apple's falling behind.
It's a perception that Apple is falling behind.
Yes, there is that perception, but I think that perception is wrong.
I agree. I can see where when you compare it, just as when I give a voice command or a voice query to an Echo versus a HomePod, the likelihood that I'm going to get a more useful answer to the query is higher on the Echo today. Sure, in many cases, yes. However, when you look at what's happening with all the rest of the voice control and AI level stuff that doesn't even necessarily involve voice, Apple is doing stuff that none of their competitors are doing.
Yeah, and I feel like Apple is not. This is sort of like the. I'm touching on something else you said, is that Apple doesn't do a good job of selling that message.
And yeah, I agree.
Which I'm assuming there's a reason for that, and it could be that they're simply wanting to have something more to crow about. But this business in particular of being able to handle more of our voice assistant stuff on the local device is huge. I know that most people don't care that all their conversations are being listened to. Like, I see stuff all the time on social media where some influencer is talking about how everything, including Apple, is like listening in on your phone conversations or listening in on your conversations, right? That they're always talking about that. And it's like, not Apple.
Yeah, Apple has made it very clear that that's not something they're interested in. Now, I can totally appreciate people being cynical and saying, well, that's what they're telling us, but that's not what they're doing.
That's because they don't listen to what Apple has told us.
Right. And if Apple were actually listening in on everything and then explaining to us and to shareholders, this is not something that they do, and here's why they don't do it, but they actually were doing it, Apple would end up at some point in legal hot water.
Oh yeah.
And that's a hot water thing they don't want to jump into.
There are probably more lawyers constantly combing Apple for things that they could be sued for than probably the next 20 companies combined, because Apple has all the money. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, Apple, yeah, couldn't lie about this. But again, I think that this on-device stuff is huge and it's important. And I loved hearing the changes in Apple Watch and iPhone about this on these upgrades. It's why I am getting a new Apple Watch, and it's, well, that plus my battery is starting to go, and why I'm getting a new iPhone.
All right. So since you're getting new devices on your Apple Watch, which one are you going to get?
I'm going to get the Ultra 2.
Okay.
I really like the new face that they're showing for the Ultra 2. It has more space for more widgets, and I am really, really digging that.
Yeah, and you have a great graphic element that can show just how flat it is where you live with the altitude graph.
Yeah. Hey, we've got the LOL Mountains right out my window.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The hills. I know which ones you're talking about. Yes.
I having lived in Colorado, I do get kind of tickled when people call those the Santa Cruz Mountains. It's like the LOL Mountains. But yeah, I don't need the Ultra 2 from the standpoint of being outdoorsy. I have been more active in recent weeks, and I believe that this will continue, but even activeness is not why I want this. I want this because of the display, and I wanted to try it.
You know, that's totally valid. And I've seen some people being shamed for wanting the Ultra, even though they're not like super active outdoors people. And don't shame people for that. If this is a product that is going to make you happy, that's good enough. And seriously, if the only reason you wanted this was because you just like the new watch face options, that's a legit reason to get this. That's totally okay.
Yeah.
I
didn't have any doubt of that.
And yeah, it's and I'm pointing this out because I just want people to keep in mind that it's okay to want what you want, and you don't have to justify it to other people. Get what you want and be happy with it.
Yeah.
And Brian, I think for you, this is a watch that you'll enjoy, and I think with the features it has over time, you'll start using it for more things.
That's possible. I do use my Apple Watch a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But
today you don't have that special programmable control button.
Right.
But you will. But I will. And you're going to find a use for that. And
I'm sure
once you find the use, you'll wish that you had that feature years ago.
That seems reasonable. I am going to miss my oh my goodness, what's the name of this watch strap? The Milanese Loop.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Can you put regular Apple Watch straps on the Ultra?
You can.
Yeah, I don't really know that a black Milanese Loop is going to look good with the Ultra, but I will try it. But anyway, the point is, I'm getting an Ultra 2. Did you order a new one?
I did not. I got the Series 8, and the features in the 9, I really, really like. But for me, a brighter screen, which even though we've established it's not really twice as bright perceptually, a brighter screen is still nice because I live in Colorado. I have a lot more glare. Brighter is better for displays outdoors. And the new gestures, to me, those are really compelling features. But I have a Series 8. It's still under Apple Care. I haven't had this watch long enough to feel like I would feel good with doing an upgrade to a 9 right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I probably would be the same if I was on an 8. The fact that I'm on 7 and the battery's going dead, though, that was probably keyer for me than even the stuff that we already talked about.
If I run a 7, I would probably be buying the 9.
And I offer all that from the standpoint of people who are, you know, weighing whether or not to upgrade.
Yeah.
It's not because I'm obsessing over me, which I could forgive you if you assume that. It's that, you know, it's people who are weighing whether or not to upgrade and just trying to offer our perspective on those reasons.
Yeah. There we go. By the way, we were calling it system and processor, system and package.
Ah, you were calling it that.
Yeah, but it's all about you. So there you go.
Well played. Okay, well, let's move on to iPhone, eh?
Sounds good. And did you like the new iPhones?
Yes, I did. I think the camera improvements, especially on the Pro and especially on the Pro Max, are insane.
I agree. And when I look at what you're getting on the non-Pro line, holy crap, you're getting an iPhone 14 Pro at a non-Pro price. Now, granted, there are a couple other differences, but I think for most people,
the camera,
they won't matter.
I agree with that. But the camera on the 14 Pro is still better than the camera on the 15.
Yes, because you have the telephoto and macro lens.
Yes.
Yeah, you have that third lens. That said, for most people, that doesn't matter.
Nope.
And this created an interesting thing for me when I was looking at the in the 6.1 inch size, the 15 and the 15 Pro. The jump into the Pro model, if you're considering the 15 as opposed to 15 Pro, but making the jump to the Pro model, it doesn't make sense to jump to the 6.1 screen. You should jump to the 6.7 screen or the Max screen, because to me the for most people the real differentiators when you're going from standard to Pro with 15 line is the cameras that are in the Pro Max. Getting that
120 millimeter telephoto lens.
Right. And other than that, I think for a lot of people, it won't matter that on the 15, you don't have USB 3, you have USB 2, you don't have the telephoto lens. And honestly, I think for most people, the ProMotion display unless they're holding a ProMotion and non-ProMotion display side by side, they cannot tell the difference. So,
agreed.
I don't think that's going to be a huge differentiator for a lot of people either. It comes down to those cameras and the Macs. That's where the cameras really are.
Okay. So, first of all, I agree with everything you just said. However, I do think that the 77 millimeter telephoto lens is also good, and that's in the Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the 120 that comes with the Pro Max is kind of insane, but I actually have a sweet spot for the 85 millimeter range. They're plus or minus some, so that works for me. And to your point, I was tempted by the Pro Max version for the first time because of the camera.
And I totally get it. And for me, I'm looking because once the Pro line was a thing, I've always bought a Pro iPhone. And when they were laying out the specs this year for the 15 and then the 15 Pro, this is the first year where I was watching the specs and questioning if I really needed a Pro phone. And I found that to be fascinating.
That's fair. For me, ultimately, it came down to not wanting to carry around the Pro Max.
And I don't want to carry the Pro Max either. I don't want the bigger size phone. The 6.1 inch screen, that phone's already too big for what I want to carry. So I'm not going to get anything bigger. But I appreciate that because of the space that they need to do the things they're doing with the cameras, that at least this year, they couldn't fit the components in the 15 Pro to do that 5X optical zoom with prisms.
I kind of doubt that's going to change, because if I remember correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, last year, the 14 Pro and the 14 Pro Max had the same cameras.
Right.
So I'm sure that the Apple was like, look, guys, you got to come up with something better in the Pro Max, something that we can't do in the Pro. I feel like that conversation was had. And therefore, I feel like even if Apple could do the 120 millimeter lens in the 16 Pro next year, that they would only do that if they could then do a 200 millimeter or 150 millimeter in the Pro Max.
Based on what we've been able to glean about iPhone sales, I don't think they need the camera differentiator between the two Pro models, because the Pro Max was the more popular model in the 14.
That's interesting.
But that said, I could see why Apple would still say, hey, let's put the better one there. I'm leaning more towards with the space other components take up, that they need to miniaturize even more something else to make space for that tri-prism thing in the smaller iPhone.
It's a four-way. They said that they were bouncing the light off of prism four times for the 120 millimeter.
Yeah, what did they call it? I'm looking for it in my notes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have notes. Nope, that's a special. Oh, I can't find it in my notes. Anyhow, but I made a joke about it on Mastodon about the name for the prisms. But I'm anyhow, sure I do like
who does a fine for you. Could probably chuckled.
Right, that they'll enjoy it. So I do like that. That we get the 24, 28, 35 millimeter capabilities, that the 48 megapixel options extend from Pro Raw into Hive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As well. So that was pretty cool. And if you want to do spatial video, meaning 3D video, you need a Pro phone.
Yes. What, the Pro Max or the Pro?
Either Pro.
Okay. Good.
I believe. Yeah. So that's smart because now people can start capturing 3D video so that they're ready to watch their own videos in 3D when Vision Pro drops early 2024.
Right. All right. So I think we're both in agreement that the camera improvements are out of this world.
Yes.
And I think we're both in agreement that the increased neural engine capacity on the A17, right? It's what it is, A17?
A17.
It's not an A17 Pro or anything like that, right?
I think it's just A17.
So the A17 will... the neural engine improvements in that are out of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And the computational photography improvements that are being made, which I think is included in the 15 and the 15 Pro. Is that correct?
Yes. And I'm looking at Apple's website. The chip is the A17 Pro is what they're calling it.
Okay. A17 Pro. And do you have, a comparison of features for the iPhone?
I can. Funny thing is, I did have that up yesterday and closed that tab.
Okay. It turns out I found it.
Excellent.
Computational computing photography, computational. Nope, they don't list it specifically. But I believe that spans both devices and that those improvements are a big reason for the camera. I haven't acknowledged your original point, which is that the camera on the 15 is itself amazing.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So the 15 has the 16 Bionic and the 15 Pro has the A17 Pro.
Yep. And okay, Brian, here's the thing for me comparing the 6.1 inch phones. The thing that I have to debate is, do I need the 15 Pro cameras so much that it justifies buying that instead of a regular 15? I mean, seriously, for me, it comes down to what do I want from the cameras?
Yeah, that's fair. What are you on?
I'm on a 12 Pro right now.
Yeah. Then yes, you do need it.
Yeah. So, I mean, even going to the standard 15, I'm getting a big camera upgrade.
Yes, you're getting a huge camera upgrade. And the thing that they do have is the portrait focus and depth control that you can do before and after.
Which is cool.
Yes. That was the thing I was thinking about. So the roadside assistance via satellite, that's going to be available on the 14 too. The crash detection remains available on the 14, 15, and 15 Pro. Yeah, I feel like that the upgrades in the 15 Pro and the 15 were both excellent. And anyone who chooses any one of these three phones is doing it right.
Yeah, seriously, my feeling is that this year. And I was feeling this pretty much last year also, but this year with more conviction. It doesn't matter which iPhone you get, you are not making a bad choice.
Oh, the action button.
Oh, yeah, that's the one thing that actually disappoints me. Well, I appreciate what it's capable of, and I think it's a very cool feature, losing the ability to know from a tactile standpoint if my phone is muted without having to look at anything, that's a big thing for me.
I agree with that.
I use that switch multiple times every day, and being able to double check whether or not I'm muted without actually looking at my phone is a big, big thing.
Without looking at your phone screen, because you do have to look. Well, no, you can.
I don't even have to look at my phone.
Yeah,
no, that's my phone can be in my pocket and I can just toggle the switch back and forth and be like, yeah, I'm really in mute.
So, yeah, I don't think the action button is a deal killer either way. Like, I don't think, if you get the action button is not. All right, let's back up. Let's tell them what the action button is. I know we're running out of time.
The action button, it replaces a mute switch. So if you press and hold, you'll get tactile feedback that lets you know that you have just enabled mute. But you can also program it so that you can do another tap. I don't know if you have multiple tap options, but you can program other stuff.
You can program the button to do other things instead of toggling the
music. Yes. And one of the things they even touted, which I thought was actually surprising and kind of cool, was attach a shortcut to it.
Yeah. So you can do even more.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So but apparently Apple does remember they have shortcuts.
So this is on the 15 Pro and the 15 Pro Max. It's not on the 15. I don't think that's a deal killer either way.
Yeah. It's
unless you just can't wait to get your mitts on the action button. And that's kind of weird. But, you do you.
There are different features that are going to be more appealing to different people. And yeah, so whatever it is that gets you all excited about the new iPhone, lean into it.
Sure. Sure. All right. There we go. That's our recap of Apple's media event. Oh, by the way, I finally pulled up Apple's homepage before the keynote, and I saw the version of that logo that was on the homepage.
Mm-hmm.
And that version, which is animated, even more made me feel like they're taking a sheen off of the foundation title credits and the foundation paint, the paint that the emperor uses for his little
oh yeah, I call it the living paint, but that's not what it's really called, but right. Yes.
Right. And I mean, this didn't have anything to do with the media event, but I feel like they were definitely taking a sheen off of the paint. And then again, the effects during the title sequence of foundation.
It totally had that feel.
Yeah. Which is not some like gotcha moment. I'm just excited because I find it interesting.
Yeah. It was interesting. Yeah. And cool graphics. And I enjoyed the media event. I thought the whole thing was done really well.
Oh, one more thing. Mm-hmm. One more thing. Mm-hmm. I love the brushed effect on the titanium on the 15 Pro. But they're all going to go in a case anyway, so we're not going to see them.
Well, yes, but with what Apple did with the 15 and 15 Pro this year, I think they're really doubling down on passive aggressively telling us, or at least passively telling us, they really want us using our iPhones naked, meaning the phone naked, not us naked. But I'm not judging.
Maybe.
I mean, because they made a point about talking about the durability, how easy it is to replace the back glass on the 15, and doing the texture stuff so that it's more grippy. That's all stuff you do when you want people to show off the phone without a case.
That is a fair point. And speaking of cases, I've got one more thing.
Okay.
I feel like Apple has put a major hurt on the leather industry. The leather industry writ large.
Yeah. It's, well, I mean, yeah, because Apple said we're not using leather on anything anymore. And even the leather Apple Watch Hermes bands, those actually were pulled and were not on sale anymore, like a day before the keynote. And yeah, Apple's like, no leather. So I think that's going to have an impact on at least part of the market. But at the same time, there's so many companies out there that are ready to capitalize on selling us leather products for our Apple gear. That market will continue. But yeah, if you're dealing with Apple directly to sell leather products, you're suddenly going to have a problem.
Yeah. And here's why. I mean, like, you made the point to me that really this opens up the opportunities for third parties more. Like everybody mm-hmm. who wants a leather case now has to go to a third party. Mm-hmm. They cannot get a leather case from Apple. I feel like, though, that the messaging from Apple is going to be such that it has an overall depressive effect on leather demand. Which is fine if that's the case. I just think this is interesting. I personally ordered a new case from Blackbrook and it shipped today. So I'm sure that it's going to fit because they totally had iPhone 15 models ahead of time
mm-hmm.
to test with.
So you will have a leather case for your iPhone.
Yes, I will have a leather case for my iPhone. But I don't know. I could be wrong. And I don't think, like, I think that everybody's opinion on this, including mine, is going to be completely anecdotal and personal. I think we would need to see statistics on whether or not leather consumption has decreased or increased in the accessories market to actually know. But I do feel that it will have an overall depressive effect on the market.
Someone somewhere is going to be running spreadsheets tracking exactly that.
Yeah, probably. And if it's you, let us know.
Right.
Okay. So on that happy note, because I know you got to go. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Brian.
That's this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Dr. Boom, recorded just for the show. And hey, Jeff.
Hey, Brian.
That's all for this week, brother.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, went a whole show without mentioning my book.
What the